The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Ben Wright Human, author of the webcomics Cospain and the Letters of the Devil, and you are listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 197. I hope you're doing well out there as you're listening to this episode. And my guest, who is appearing here, has been on multiple times, but he has a new project out, and I wanted to get him on. And of course, I'm talking about Mr. Stephen Hines. He was on the PVD Cast just about a year ago, June 7th of 2018 to be exact, episode number 156. And at that time, he was talking about a project called Soccer Mom Killer. Well, he's back on this edition to talk about Soccer Mom Killer 2. That's right. The sequel is out and he has a Kickstarter on it. And as a matter of fact, it's been up for about 3 days now and it's about 40% funded. So that's really good for Steven. The Kickstarter ends July 24th. We're going to talk all about it here on this edition. In fact, just go over to Kickstarter.com, search for Soccer Mom Killer, and it'll pop right up there, and you can check out the video and read all about it if you want to donate some cash. I already did. I plunked down my contribution to get a print version of Soccer Mom Killer 2 because I really liked the first one. I'm going to talk a little bit about the things that I really, really liked about it. But if you don't even have issue one, that's what's great about this Kickstarter. You can get both editions. That's right. There's an incentive. There's a tier. There's a reward, if you will, whatever you want to call it, right there on the Kickstarter that'll let you get both issues. So it's like a one-stop shop for all things SMK. But before we get into the conversation that Steven and I had, I would like to just throw it out there real quick that this past weekend, I joined the Three Geeks podcast to talk a little bit about Shaft. That's right. I went and saw the new version of Shaft and sit down and compare it with the other two versions, the 1971 version and the 2000 version, and wax poetically about that movie franchise with Dan, Max, and Jason of the Three Geeks podcast. All you got to do is go to 3geeks.ninja, which is their website, and get all the details to hear that. A really fun episode. I really enjoy dissecting those three movies and talking about them. And with that, I think it's time for me to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. As you know, they have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their awesome service. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Once again, it's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I sit down with Mr. Stephen Hines as we talk about his Kickstarter for the second installment of Soccer Mom Killer. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down this afternoon with Mr. Stephen Hines. Stephen, welcome back to the PVD Cast. How are you?
I'm awesome, man. Thanks for having me back.
You're quite welcome. It was almost about a year ago. I looked it up. Episode 156, which was June 7th of 2018. Was the last time you were on here and you were talking about the project that we are actually also still going to be talking about here today, and that is the Soccer Mom Killer. So let's go ahead and just start off. Can you give us a brief summary of what this project's all about?
Sure. We're kickstarting the second issue of the Soccer Mom Killer, but of course you can get both issues through the campaign. But the story is about a serial killer in a small Ohio suburb of Columbus, Ohio. And this serial killer specializes in hunting and killing minivan-driving soccer moms.
All right. Now, issue one came out, I want to say, in the fall of last year, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so now you're gearing up for issue two. You have a Kickstarter. It has actually started here on June 21st. So let's talk a little bit about the Kickstarter since we're, you know, it's topical and we're discussing it right now. What are some of the incentives connected to the Kickstarter for those folks that want to plunk down their hard-earned cash?
We have incentives. Well, we have pledge levels all the way from $1 just to, you know, support the cause. And you can get e-comics, PDFs of the issues for $3. Of course, you can get a hard copy of issue one, hard copy package with both issues. You can get, if you pledge on the first day, so well, within the first 24 hours of the launch, which by the time this airs, that's probably over with, you get two bonus prints by two amazing artists that I recruited. And let's see, other incentives include you can get a police report by the Astorville City Police Department, which is the fictional police department in the comic book, with complete with a narrative about your heinous crimes that can either be hilarious or gruesome and disturbing, whichever you would like. And we also have a four-button pack. Two of the buttons have the two issues covers, and two of the buttons come with brand new bonus art by an artist who calls herself Mal Macabre. And let's see, some of the other packages, you can get a cameo in issue three, and at the highest levels, you can get a cameo in issue three and on the cover when we collect them into a trade paperback for the graphic novel edition. And at the highest level, you can score original art by Derek Worley, who did the bonus art for issue one with the knife stabbing into the soccer ball, which is amazingly badass.
Can I ask, who are some of the other, you mentioned you have a couple new artists that were doing some work for some of those incentives, some of those different tiers, some of those different levels. Who are the new artists you have working on the on some projects?
Well, they're not totally new, but another one of the pieces was contributed by Derek Worley, the guy I just mentioned. He contributed the most badass piece of bonus art I've ever had someone contribute. It has a skull with soccer balls inside the eye sockets, and it has the initials SMK carved into the head of the skull. And I told him, I said, I want to get this tattooed on my ass. Not on my ass, I mean, on my skin.
Well, wherever you put your tattoos, it's totally up to you, man.
Just to clarify. And the other bonus art was by the amazing Aaron Lindemann, who did Zombie Fabulous with me. And he did an amazing piece of color bonus art of the two detectives, Balmer and Johnson, that turned out fantastic.
Can I ask real quick about another piece of artwork that I saw on your Facebook page, the video for SMK, which was kind of like a thunderstorm, like soccer ball. Who was that your doing, or did you have somebody else create that for you?
I actually made that myself, and it turned out way better than I thought it would.
Well, it's awesome. It is really cool. It looks fantastic, and it encompasses, you know, pretty much the same tone and vibe of the book. So hats off to you. That was fantastic, man.
Oh, thanks. I'm thinking about getting, like, if we hit some stretch goals, I have a frozen image of that video, from that video, that would make a kick-ass poster. And I'm thinking about offering that as I'm having a brain fart here, a stretch goal. And I have a few other ideas that I'm kicking around for stretch goals as well, but like a sticker of the skull with the SMK carved into its head, like through Sticker Mule or something like that. I think that would be pretty amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the first issue. I've read it. I'm going to try not to spoil anything, but there were a couple of things that I really liked, and I just would like to comment on and see if you can give me a little more clarification or explain a little bit more about some of them. One of the things I noticed, and those that read issue one will probably pick up on this too, your dialogue is more in a typed font. It looks like, you know, like a typewriter. Instead of sometimes, you know, when most of the time, I think you see a little bit of a different style of font when it comes to word balloons and whatnot. Why did you use the type font?
I think it jived with the feel of the book, because there's so much of it is focused around the cops hunting this psychopath. Mm-hmm. And it kind of felt like a typed police report kind of a font to me, even when the cops weren't talking.
Okay. Now, one other thing I really like, Stephen, with the book was I really enjoyed the killer's rationale, which appears, I believe, right at the beginning of what you labeled as chapter one, where it's kind of like the manifesto of the killer. Mm-hmm. I really liked that. I really dug it. It's got a very Punisher-like feel to it, where he feels like he or she is doing the right thing by having this crusade. So what made you think about putting that in the book, and why so early on in the book?
Honestly, when I think I talked about the genesis for the idea for this trilogy last time we talked, but if people haven't listened to that one, the original idea came to me just out of anger, because I had a soccer mom at a local park just walk right out in front of me while I was riding my bike for exercise, and almost caused me to get into an accident and mess myself up on some concrete. And then I sat on the idea for a while. And then when I started to write it, when I write, I don't plan anything out for the most part. It just, I see it in my head and I just type it. And sometimes I don't necessarily always hear a voice in my head when I'm typing dialogue or narrative, like the case with the killer's manifesto, but it just pops into my head. And I guess that's probably a scary sign for if there are any psychiatrists listening, but it just happened organically. And there really wasn't any, you know, pre-planning or anything.
Okay. Well, since we're on the topic of characters, and you mentioned right there in a beautiful explanation about why you were inspired to create some of these soccer moms, who a couple of them are just downright just nasty individuals. I'll just say it that way.
Oh, and it gets worse.
It gets worse. Okay. Well, something to look forward to.
Exactly.
Well, how about the police officers, Balmer and Johnson? What were your inspirations for creating those characters in the way in which you portray them?
Honestly, I've watched way too many true crime shows, and my wife watches a ton of things like Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, and stuff like that. And I just, my brain just kind of soaks all that stuff in, and I retain huge quantities of useless information. And then when I write, I think some of it just kind of congeals into its own thing and kind of bubbles to the surface. But I did do some research to make sure I was getting police procedure correct. Okay. and things like that, because there's nothing worse than reading a comic or a regular novel, and even being a lay person and not being a police officer and going, come on, dude, there's no way a cop could get away with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the time when I was originally writing the script, cause it's been written for 2-3 years now, I think, at the time, we had a school resource officer who was also on like the SWAT team, local SWAT team. So I would pester him with questions on Messenger and like, hey, you know, if the cop was faced with this kind of a situation, you know, how would they handle it? Or what's that thing called that you guys use to break into a car when someone's locked their keys in it and that kind of stuff?
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the very striking art that you have in issue one. And I'm not sure that I could do her name justice, so I do apologize if I butcher it. Nella, I believe, is her first name, correct?
Honestly, I don't know how to pronounce it either. I pronounce it Nayla, but you could be right. So tomato, okay. Tomato, tomato.
There you go. So how did you find her? I know you talked about this in the previous time you were on here, but just maybe for new listeners or for those folks that need a memory check, if you will, how did you find her? How did you, why did you select her over other candidates, et cetera, et cetera?
I put an ad, and if any other comic book writers are listening out there and you're struggling to find an artist that matches your vision for your book, I put an ad on digitalwebbing.com. Mm-hmm. And you have to specify, you know, whether it's a paid job, how much your page rate is that you can afford, you know, put like a price window, be specific, which, and you can haggle with the artist a little bit, and a description of the project. And I had a ton of amazing artists who applied for the job, and, you know, they post links to their artist portfolios online, and I would check them out, and just most of them didn't fit the vibe of the book, you know, and some of them were just way too neat and clean and Marvel or DC looking for me, and too polished. And I narrowed it down to two people. And one was a guy that was just on the edge of being too polished, but his style had a nice noir feel to it. And so I paid him to do a key page of the script, and he sent it to me, and it was amazing. And I paid money to Nayla to do that same page. And I was just about to pull the trigger on the other guy, even though it didn't feel 100% correct, because he was a little bit more affordable. And then I got Nayla's page of artwork, and I opened it on my phone. I think I was at work on my lunch break, and I literally jerked back from my phone and gasped. It was so amazing. And I got home, and my wife is an amazing artist too, but she doesn't do comic book style art. She does paintings, and she does really weird conceptual art. And I showed it to her, and she jerked back from my phone and gasped. And I said, all right, that's a great sign right there. And I hired her immediately.
Well, yeah, and her artwork is really striking, as I said before, and especially with what the subject matter is. I think it fits in really, really nicely. Yeah, you certainly made a very good choice there.
Yeah, I couldn't turn her down. I mean, she's working for probably a little bit less than she could normally make, but because it's a three issue project, she kind of cut me a deal, which was awesome. But she puts so much detail into every panel, and I don't know how anyone could read these comics quickly, because when I read a comic book with art like that, I just have to stop and drool over the art and just soak it in, like, oh my God, look at all that.
Mm-hmm. So without giving away too much, what can readers expect in issue 2? I mean, issue 1 has kind of laid the groundwork, so to speak, for this tale. Can you even explain to me and to the listeners what to expect, or is it just something you have to see for yourself?
I can tell you that the body count will go up. And I can also tell you that as the killer goes on, he's continuing to dig deeper and expose the rotten underbelly of this supposedly pristine and squeaky clean suburban Ohio town that looks so perfect on the surface. Mm-hmm. And with each person he kills, he's leaving his notes behind on why he killed that person and exposing their secrets. And it just gets more dark and twisted as it goes on.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go, folks. Let's talk a little bit about some of your other comics too, real quick, because I know we talked about one just in passing when you were talking about the fabulous artists you've been working with. So let's talk about Zombie Fabulous. It's a tale of the zombie apocalypse, but it has a unique twist. What's that twist, Steven?
The twist is that drag queens have died and have come back as zombies, and they are torn between their desire to remain fabulous and their craving for human brains.
And it's been a very, very successful project, has it not?
Yeah, up until the first issue of Soccer Mom Killer came out, it's always been my bestseller at almost every convention I go to. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I had Soccer Mom Killer on my table that it's kind of fallen into second place, which makes me feel great about the Soccer Mom Killer, but it still sells very strongly.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have more tales with Zombie Fabulous? Because I know that you got up to, what issue did you get up to? Three? Did you get up to three?
Yeah, it was meant to be a trilogy, but eventually when I get sold out of single issues of the trilogy, my plan is to collect them into a graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And I'll do a Kickstarter for it to finance the printing and to make it worth people's while to buy the collected trilogy. I want to include a bonus story with Aaron doing the art, because I really loved working with Aaron. He's a super nice guy, as professional as you can get. And so I'd like to include a bonus story. I have no idea what that bonus story is going to be yet, but it'll pop into my pea brain eventually.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about another project, Valedictorian USA, which is a reality TV competition show focused around American teenagers and how that kind of causes, I guess you could say, some damage in the lives of those folks. So, but recently I just saw you don't necessarily have to purchase Valedictorian USA. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been putting it out page by page through Webtoons. If you have that app, you can read the first, I think we're up into issue 4 at this point, what I've posted. Mm-hmm. And actually, as far as putting that out in comic book form, I've recently kind of had to make a very tough decision as an author in a one-man publishing company to pull the plug on putting it out in comic book format, because it just doesn't sell well for me. Mm-hmm. And it's so expensive to pay an artist to do it. So it was originally intended to be put out as a novel in script format to emphasize the fakeness of and the manipulation of reality TV. So I think I hate to do it because I really like putting it out in comic book form, but my plan is to eventually put out the whole story in script format in novel format the way it was originally intended, and just put it out there and see how it does in that format.
Okay. Well, one comic that I just saw on, I believe, either your Twitter or your Facebook, there's a comic that's back in print, right?
Oh, yeah. Iconoplastic. That was the first Kickstarter campaign I ever did.
Yeah. How's it feel to bring it back? And I guess the big question is, why did you decide to bring it back?
It feels great to have it back in print. Honestly, there was no reason other than lack of finances for why it has been out of print for a few years.
Okay.
I really still love that story. It's a really short story. It's only 9 pages, and it's about a rock and roll band that rises from rags to riches. And it has a really twisted and kind of a surreal Franz Kafka ending to it. And the art is just phenomenal. The guy who did the pencils for it, Rafer Roberts, who used to be famous for Plastic Farm, is now writing comics for Valiant Comics.
Oh, okay.
And I think he also has done some work with Dark Horse and another company that escapes me at the moment, but he did the pencils for it. And his friend Jake Warrenfeld, who's a badass artist and bass player too, did the inking and the gray shading on it. And it's a really cool story.
Well, that's cool that it's back in print. So folks, if you're out in a Comic-Con, you see Steven, pick it up. But let's talk about a little bit of some biographical work that you've done. Your comic that is kind of about your job as a stock boy is Cracker Stacker.
Yes, sir. That one has been a strong seller for me, too. I'm actually finally working on the pencils for issue 6. After I think it's been 2 years since issue 5 came out. And I've just had too many things on my plate. And I'm such a painfully slow artist that every time I have to do the art for an issue of Cracker Stacker, I sit there and mumble and cuss under my breath and say, now I know why I pay professional artists to do my other shit.
You know, you're not the only creator that has been on this podcast that said the same thing about trying to write and do the art. It seems like, just from my own personal opinion or observation, it seems that those folks that are pretty proficient writers, pretty good writers, aren't very talented when it comes to art, or if they are, they're so slow. I've heard that multiple times from creators on here, that, you know, those folks that excel at writing really want to stick to just being writers and not try to do the other side of the table, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating. I mean, I'm not a horrible artist by any means, but I'm definitely not awesome. And I have to rely a lot on reference pictures to, you know, get body language right and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I just get impatient with it because I can create a picture with words a hell of a lot faster. And I'm sitting there trying to draw and it's coming out looking all mutated and messed up, and I get mad and crumple it up and throw it against the wall. It's like, I wish I could pay somebody to do this.
Well, and your other autobiographical work is the memoir that you created called Rebirth Defect, and it chronicles your journey through several different organized religions. So has that been selling well?
That's been selling ridiculously well since I just happened to sell one random copy through my Etsy store. I think it was to a former student, and I just snapped a quick picture of me packaging it up and posted it on Instagram and Facebook and said, yep, mailing out another copy of Rebirth Defect. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I sold a whole bunch through my Etsy store. I sold some copies of the audiobook through Audible and some through Amazon, and what just went crazy on me. And it was like an accidental perfect advertising campaign.
So where's the farthest that you've shipped a copy of Rebirth Defect? Do you recall?
Oh, that's a good question.
Okay.
Probably the New England area, maybe.
Okay. Respectable. All right. Yeah. I just think it's always kind of, especially like, I'm going to bring it onto the podcast side of things. When I look at my statistics and you go, wow, someone in Italy listened to one episode. Wow. Yeah, that's weird.
It's weird. It's
mind-blowing. Yeah. So I wondered if you had that same experience when you were shipping things out.
I get more of that with my Kickstarter campaigns, and like, especially with the Soccer Mom Killer, even though everybody in every other country in the world calls it football, but I had a ton of electronic comics that I sold for that for issue one. And it was Australia, France, Ireland, and the UK, and all kinds of crazy places. And it was really cool to see it going out to all those different countries. I sold a few hard copies going all the way out to different countries too.
Oh, wow. That's cool, man. That's really cool.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm getting back to the Soccer Mom Killer on you, but this comic, more so than Zombie Fabulous, has tapped into the more hardcore horror fan base. Mm-hmm. Than Zombie Fabulous did. I think Zombie Fabulous appealed more to fans of LGBTQ literature and stuff like that than straight up horror fans. Mm-hmm. And this one is I seem to have accidentally tapped into a vein of just straight up hardcore horror fans. And they were so into it with the first Kickstarter campaign. They were messaging me. They were interacting with me throughout the whole campaign. And that's something I haven't really experienced until then.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's talk about the Kickstarter info for issue two. Now, as of the airing of this podcast, the campaign has been live for roughly about a week or so. And but give folks all the information as to where they can find it, because I assume that it's going to be much like many other Kickstarters. It's a 30-day campaign, correct?
Yep.
So just because you've missed a couple of days on the opening end of things doesn't mean you still can't plunk down your money and get yourself a copy of issue two and, heck, issue one if you don't have one. So, Stephen, what's all the information for the Kickstarter?
The only thing I can tell you right now is to just go to Kickstarter and search Soccer Mom Killer, or search Stephen Hines, and Soccer Mom Killer will probably be your best bet to find it quickly. Or hopefully you'll be able to click on the horror genre button on Kickstarter and it will be one of the first ones that pops up.
There you go. And you know what? Maybe I'm going to ask real quickly if you got any appearances coming up, but I want to get back to where people can get in contact with you just in case they do have questions about where to find the Kickstarter and all that jazz. But let's talk about upcoming appearances. You got any conventions you're going to be at, or any comic book stores or whatnot that you're going to be hanging out at, hawking your wares, so to speak?
Yes. Next weekend, about the time this airs, I will be at the Dark X Fest, which is the first horror convention I've ever tried. And that's in Hudson, Ohio. A whole bunch of kind of minor horror celebrities from Chainsaw Massacre and stuff like that going to be there. Mm-hmm. And let's see, July 28th, I will be at River City Con in Marietta, Ohio. And let me see. August. I thought I had something in August. I don't. It's September 7th, I will be at Yo Ice, which is a small indie comics convention in Youngstown, Ohio. September 21st, I will be at the Kentucky Free Thought Convention, which is an atheist convention. And I'm excited about that one because it was a hell of a lot of fun to do 2 years ago. It's a biannual thing. And they have lots of great speakers. And it's really weird because there are vendors set up selling their books and things. And everybody's out there shopping, and then they'll have another keynote speaker doing a presentation about some topic, and everybody abandons all the merchant tables and goes in there to get educated on some kind of a topic. So as an author, I just go in there and I have fun learning some new things, and then go back out to my table and sell some more books, and then go back in.
Yeah, cool, man. Cool. All right, well, let's let folks know where they can get in touch with you on social media and whatnot. For if they have any questions about the Soccer Mom Killer issue 2 or issue 1 or any of your other projects that you're working on.
You can find me on Facebook. Just search under Stephen Hines, Stephen with a PH, H-I-N-E-S. And I'm the goofy looking guy who I think I'm still hugging Chewbacca in my no, I'm not hugging Chewbacca. It's just a goofy close up of my face with a Happy Pride Month frame around my face. On Instagram and Twitter, my username is at Stephen Hines 67. 67, in case anyone wondering, is not the year I was born, and it's also not my IQ. It is just it is a reference to a song by a band called King's X, which is one of my favorite bands of all time.
And you know what? I'm going to give you compliments on the Facebook group that you created, Behind the Scenes, which is very punny. I like that.
I did it crack you up?
Anyways, so you could actually join that group and find out all about your projects, correct?
Yes. I got a tip from another author. If there are any other authors out there listening, a good way to get around Facebook's analytics and their algorithms, I should say, squashing all of your attempts to promote yourself is to create a group and invite people to join. And that way, every post that you see that you put in there gets seen instead of getting squashed because Facebook is trying to force you to purchase ads.
You know what? You've just educated me there, man. I never, ever heard that before, but that's food for thought for the PVD cast. I appreciate that, Stephen. Thank you.
Hey, I was useful for a change, man.
All right. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you a lot for having me, dude.
You got it, man. You got it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Stephen Hines talking about the Kickstarter for issue 2 of Soccer Mom Killer. And I can't encourage you enough to go over to Kickstarter.com, search for Soccer Mom Killer, donate whatever you're comfortable donating, and help make this project a reality. And now I think it's time for me to tell you where you can get in touch with me if you choose to. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. If you'd like to shoot me an email, you can do so, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can even leave me a message over on the Facebook page of this podcast, that of course being facebook.com/PVDcast. And don't forget that you can get this podcast a variety of different ways. Like you need reminding, but you know, maybe you want to tell somebody about it. And there's a lot of different places where you can get it. You can get it at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. You can also find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, the Echo Network, Libsyn Podcast Player, basically anywhere where podcasts are. All you have to do is search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to throw my name in there, PVDcast John Orlando. And you will be sure to find it. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, to rate and review. And if you haven't done so, subscribe so you don't miss any of the episodes of the PVD cast. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you all for listening. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.